Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. My guest today is Alvy Robles, and I'm going to be calling him in just a minute. Ah, there's the ringing. And hopefully he answers.
Hello.
Hello, Alvy. This is Mac.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, great.
We are on the air, just so you know. And
okay.
Can you hear me okay?
I sure can, yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so I had just told the people, you know, your name. And so we'll get into different things about your life and your work. And I thought you might start with growing up in New Mexico and your journey into using your voice as a career. So tell us about that.
Well, the town I grew up in New Mexico is it's right near Lincoln, or it's in Lincoln County, right next to the town Lincoln, where all the Billy the Kid stuff happened. And every year there, mm-hmm. they do kind of a play where some actors are out acting out some of the events that had happened back in those days. And they have people in the booth that are doing the voices for those. And I was asked when you're in high school to be the voice for Billy the Kid in that pageant. And it really had more of an effect on me than I realized at the time. I think that's kind of where that seed was first planted.
Mm.
As far
and
as,
now,
you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I moved up here in 2001. I got married in 2004, and around that time I did a play for North Lake College in the Dallas area. And the director there, well, the lady that runs the whole theater department, who's very respected in the community, pulled me aside and told me that she saw something in me that she hadn't seen but maybe 4 or 5 times in her entire career at the college there. She'd been doing it, you know, decades. And I was very, you know, I was very moved by that. I thought that was really great. But that also led for me to get a little depressed down the line when I was, you know, I didn't have, once I had kids, I didn't have time to pursue any of the things I like to do, whether being, you know, in a band or working on a play or pursuing acting. And it wasn't until a coworker who called me at my old job, you know, she called from a different location when I answered, and she said, "Alvy, is that you?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Oh my goodness, you should be doing voice work." And that's when it clicked that it was a way to pursue something in a creative field and at the same time still be able to work at home.
Oh, wow. That's a good story. And I like the thing that they had said about not seeing it for decades. That's always nice to hear something like that.
Absolutely.
Now, you are fluent in Spanish, and you use that a lot in your work as well, don't you?
That's correct. I do quite a bit of voiceover in Spanish. In fact, some of the most lucrative part of me for the job is doing e-learning in Spanish, you know, like training videos when somebody gets hired for a company. I do some of the Spanish versions of those, and that actually, it actually makes a lot more money than the character work does. I enjoy the character work more, but this stuff definitely pays more of the bills.
Oh, well, cool. I mean, it's always good to get money. So are you able to do like a good balance of both, like getting the ones that make more money and then the other ones that you enjoy more?
Oh, definitely. And I do enjoy both, but I do, you know, I definitely like the character work a lot more. I do get to do both quite a bit. And just last year, I started kind of expanding my horizons as far as not limiting myself to just voiceover work, but audio work in general. So I started doing kind of some Foley work for some short films here and also location sound recording for productions. So I'm out there with a boom mic and a mixer, and I have a great deal of fun with that as well, being on set.
well, yeah, I can imagine. And a lot of people, they don't realize how much work goes into some of these positions, that they just see it and think, oh, well, you know, that's not that big of a deal. Like when you, what's your emergency, a short, and you were the audio engineer. So explain to people what an audio engineer does for a film.
So audio engineering is being able to take a recording and apply, whether it's through applying filters or removing background noise, just basically knowing what levels to have on there in order for that recording to sound the best it possibly can. In some cases, the audio that's recorded for a movie is simply unusable, simply because of the location that they're in, whether it's background traffic noise or it's just noisy with too much wind or, you know, rain, it's impossible to, nearly impossible to record sound during. So a lot of times when they do something like that, you have to do what's called ADR, which is additional dialogue replacement or recording. And a lot of people, a lot of times when you're watching a movie, you're actually hearing dialogue that was recorded later at a studio. And so in What's Your Emergency, my job was to clean up the best I could all the audio that was recorded on location, but also to, you know, there were also some lines that simply were not usable because of the circumstances. You know, they were recording in some closets and things, some very vacant areas that had a lot of echo. And so we had the actress come into my voiceover studio, and I would set up to where it's going to play the movie for her, and she would re-record some of her lines to make sure that it matched her, you know, her lips and all that. And that's why it's good to still have the actual recording, because she could hear exactly how she said it and then repeat it in that way. And then I took that audio, cleaned it up, and put it into the movie. And it all turned out pretty well.
Well, yeah, and that's a lot of work.
It is quite a bit of work. I do want to add that audio engineering, at least some level of it, is almost an expected thing if you're for anybody that's kind of newly going into voiceover. A lot of people think that it is a very easy job and that all you do is talk. And I mean, first of all, most of the job is going to be marketing and trying to get the work. But these days, unless you're going into like a fairly high level production where they will just record you in studio and they have an engineer that is in house and all that, it's mostly expected otherwise for you to engineer your own work. And so you're not just learning and training the voiceover part of it, which is a lot more than people realize just on its own, how to position yourself according to the mic, how to, there's a lot to learn there, but you also need to learn to engineer that audio, and what you deliver should be basically a final product recording.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize what all goes into a film, and they get upset or they give bad reviews. I'm not saying that there's no film that didn't deserve a bad review. Of course, there are some. But I'm a semi-professional reviewer, and when I do a review, you get an automatic 1 star. I go up to 5 stars, and then I give partial stars. Quarters of stars. And so it's kind of like IMDb, but instead of 10, I use 5. Well, you get an automatic 1 star. Yeah, you get an automatic 1 star just for making the film. For the effort.
It's impressive on its own.
That's a great effort. And then for each thing, I either notice or don't notice, and I have to explain that to some people, but I'm sure I don't have to explain it to you. Like with editing, if they have great editing, because somebody even asked me once, well, how do you know if some movie has good editing? And I said, if you don't notice that they have good editing, that's when you know they have good editing. Because when they have bad editing, believe me, you'll notice when they have bad editing. And without
Absolutely.
Good editing, you don't really have a good movie without good editing. So
people
that's
don't
what
realize
I try to get across
this,
to people.
A lot of people don't realize editing wise, that there have been productions in Hollywood that are like Academy Award winning productions that were not actually directed well. Basically, the footage that they had was not, it wasn't coming together very good, and it wasn't going to be a good movie. And the editor is the person that came in and created something special with it that made it stand out as a great movie. Like, editing is that powerful and can elevate a production that much.
Well, just like music. Music can. Because I give credit for that. If the music fits the scene, and then, of course, on the other side of the coin, if it doesn't fit the scene, I probably would mention it, but I wouldn't say, oh, well, that's terrible. It's just like something for next time. But music can have a lot to do with it. I saw this documentary, and it was on how music impacts the scene. And so they played a whole bunch of ones, but the one that was the best one that they showed was the shower scene from Psycho.
Oh, yes.
And they played it without the music. And it's like, okay, you're watching it with no music, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's not very nice that he's stabbing her. But then when they put the music into it, it's like, oh, it's
it makes
a
an
big,
enormous
big,
difference.
Big difference. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm an editor also, and I went to film school in Vancouver, Canada. And one of the things that they showed us in the editing class was a scene from the old show Gunsmoke. And they took the same scene, and they gave all the raw footage to three different editors. And they all created something vastly different. One of them kept showing like the woman that was watching and putting a little romantic music when she was on. And so there was this whole romantic element to this fight that wasn't there in the other two versions. Another version chose to kind of have silence in more of it, because sometimes that's more powerful than the music is. It's really a choice. And it's just incredible how different all three of these were. They were vastly different, not just in where the cuts were, but the story that this fight was telling was entirely different in all three of these cases.
Oh, well, yeah, because each editor is giving their own personal views. Or adding them. It's not like, oh, well, it's just what I see. But they're adding their own personal view to it. And so that's very understandable that it changes it completely. Now, I wanted to go over some of your stuff. I'll save some time for your newest stuff, because you got quite a few new things coming up. So I'll just go over a couple of the old ones. So you had one that you did called Demonoids, which I believe you were the audio editor on that one as well. So tell us about Demonoids.
When I went into voiceover, I set several little kind of goals for myself, and that are things that I just would really like to do. And one of those goals was to voice some little monsters like gremlins type things, you know? When Demonoids came along, I was very excited to get to do. I did the voices for the three little monsters in the film there, and so I was the voice of those. I got my name on the opening credits for that, which I thought was just super cool, and I had so much fun voicing those guys. And the editing credit came in that this was kind of an unconventional thing, but because I am an editor, I was able to. They were in a hurry in production to get the sound, so I got everything recorded, but then I actually put it in place where the film goes and sent them the audio track that was already timed out and ready to go. All they had to do was overlay that on what they had edited, and it was all timed out and everything, which is where the audio editing credit came from. That's not typically how you do something like that. You know, usually they'll have someone on there and do it, but because I knew how to do it, so I was more than happy to help out in that way.
Oh, cool. Now, do you know where people may be able to watch this movie, like streaming or what have you?
It is available on DVD that can be ordered from the production website. The director is Dustin Ferguson, and if you look on his social media, you should be able to see how to order that or get in touch with him to ask how to order that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like to get even some of the questions that I ask, in fact, a lot of the questions that I ask, I actually know the answers to, but the point is to get the answers to anybody that may be listening, because I know that a lot of people, after, you know, hearing your voice, because that's what this is, it's a talk show, so after hearing your voice, it's like, wow, I like his voice. I wouldn't mind hearing some of his voice work, and so they might want to listen to that part of your movie or watch the whole movie, what have you.
Oh, that would be absolutely great.
Yeah. I have a very small audience, and hopefully that doesn't keep it small from saying that, but it is growing, and I have helped some people in some respects, and I have, and one reason why I know is because a couple of them have told me. One guy recently told me that he got a lot more views after being on my show. So at least I can help a little bit, and that was the purpose of my starting doing this show anyway. So,
it's great to have good intentions like that.
Yeah. Because I really wasn't interested in having a talk show per se, but I realized that it could help a lot of my friends, because I do have a lot of friends in the filmmaking industry and, family members too. And so I like to help them in this way. One small way to help them. So now there's one that I don't, thank you. There's one that I chose simply because I thought it was interesting, the character that you were portraying with your voice, Al Capone. And that was in a short called Ghostwriter. Tell us about doing that.
There's an interesting story behind that. I actually told this story on my podcast, the Scare Me podcast, because this was a little bit of an interesting story. Somebody, had posted on Facebook that they were auditioning people to be Al Capone for the short film. And I was delighted to get the part. And what I thought was pretty neat, first of all, is that me and the director share our birthday, which that was kind of cool. But This particular short film was about an author who sits down to write a book and isn't sure what to write about. And then the ghost of Al Capone shows up and is talking to her and tells her all these stories to write down about this house in Texas that he would frequent. And she does, and then she writes the whole book. And basically, it turns out that book actually is a real book. And so this was kind of a short film that was being made to promote that book. But come to find out that the claim is that this was not just a film, that this is what they said actually happened when this writer was writing this book. And she says that is how she wrote this book, is that she heard the voice of Al Capone telling her all these stories about this place in Texas that he visited. And first of all, I didn't know anything about him being in Texas. I looked that part up, and that part is true. That he had a house in Texas somewhere that he would go to a lot. But I just thought that was a very interesting story. And so I had a whole lot of fun playing Al Capone for that. And according to the author who said she saw him, I got Al's approval.
Yeah, cool.
So that was a lot of fun.
Good. I love hearing stories like that. It's real interesting, actually. There, you did a TV. What I wanted to ask you about this other one, since you mentioned it, tell the people about the Scare Me podcast, how you got it started, and whatever you want to tell us about it.
So ever since I discovered podcasts, I wanted to do one. I always thought that was a really neat concept, that anybody could kind of do a show like this, but it did seem like an out-of-reach thing, especially before voiceover. You know, it just seemed like all this stuff. You see all these really nice studios and stuff, and it didn't seem like something that was doable. But when my wife was interested in doing a podcast at one point about teaching, when she was a teacher with her niece, who was also a teacher, they asked me if I could help them do that, and I realized, wow, doing voiceover, I have everything I need. I know how to edit audio and engineer it, and I have mics and I have a studio. So I said, yeah, I'll help you. And I produced that show for them for a while it ran. And after that, that whole time I was still thinking I would love to do a podcast, but I was also thinking I have nothing to offer because they have podcasts about everything that are, some of them not very good and some of them very good. But I didn't feel like I had anything kind of original to offer that they couldn't just get somewhere else. And at some point, somebody told me a ghost story that that was something that had happened to them. And I got that feeling of getting, hairs on the back of my head, standing on end, getting goose pimples on my arms. And I love that kind of feeling of getting that kind of scared that comes from hearing a supposedly true ghost story. It's so fun for me. I love it. And so I thought, well, never mind if everyone else likes it. Like, I love how this feels, and what I can do is basically set up a podcast format where I get to feel this all the time, because it's just not about me trying to be scary, but just people telling me stories to scare me. And so I created the Scare Me podcast, and oh man, I've had some great guests that have told me some really great, really spooky stories on there.
And me having lived in a haunted house, whether some people want to believe in it or not, I lived in a haunted house for 7 years, and I've got a lot of stories from that house. And
Oh, I may have to have you on then.
a good friend of mine that once spent the night in my house, she had said, because she's religious, I'm not necessarily religious, but she's religious, but she's not like shove it down your throat religious. Otherwise, we wouldn't be friends, because I don't believe in that. I believe that everybody has their own religion, and I find some religions very interesting, the little nuances and the rituals and everything. But as long as you don't shove it down my throat, I'm fine with it. And she's that way. So I had her spend the night not too long after we first moved into that house. And before she actually spent the night, she said, well, my religion doesn't allow for me to believe in ghosts. And I said, well, that's okay. That actually doesn't mean much if you experience it. And then I said, yeah. And I said, and of course, since I told you about it, they'll probably be real quiet now and not do anything. And then I'm going to look like a fool for telling you the house was haunted. So,
Yeah, they're that Warner Brothers frog.
So she spent the night. And now she was the one that relayed the information to me, obviously, because I wasn't there. But we were sleeping upstairs, and then she was sleeping downstairs. And now we had three cats at the time. So, of course, the first thing that goes into your mind if you're a rational person is that, and that's what she was thinking at first, because she heard some stuff, and it was odd stuff like noises that cats really don't make. But because she was rational, she was thinking, well, it must be the cats. And the noises, well, cats get into stuff. And then she started feeling something on her bed, and like something was jumping on and off her bed. And I said, well, it must be the cats. So she turned the light on, and she could see all three cats just sitting there across the room, and they were watching her. And while they were all watching her, she felt the bed from something jumping on it, and then it jumped on the bed, and then jumped on the floor, and then jumped on the bed, and jumped on the floor from one side to the other, and it did like that, like 20 times or something. And she knew it wasn't the cats, and they were watching whatever it was because their heads were going up and down and up and down everything every time whatever it was jumped. And in the morning when she told me about that, she's like, I don't want to stay in your house again.
No, I get that. Man, that's crazy. That definitely would be a great story to have on the podcast.
And that's actually one of the milder stories, but I don't want to get too much into that because I don't want to take up time on your show. But it was interesting hearing about that, the Scare Me podcast. So anybody that wants to be on the show or at least try to be on his show, give him a little voice, not voice message, but a little message on Facebook.
I'm always looking for guests and stories. There are some people that maybe have some stories that do not want to come on. I'm always also looking for stories that that can tell, like in some of the introductions and whatnot.
Yeah, see, there you go, people. So you don't have to say it yourself. It can just be like an anonymous thing, and then you fun of you and stuff like that. Because believe me, I've heard it all from telling haunted stories. So people, you cannot believe in something, but you don't need to make fun of somebody for believing in it. You know, like I don't believe in voodoo. I don't believe in voodoo, but I'm not going to make fun of somebody for believing in voodoo. And for one thing, it's always best to like hedge your bets than not tempt fate. Because if you happen to be real,
that's exactly how I feel about some of those things. You know, Stephen King one time wrote in one of his introductions, I don't believe that there's something under my bed waiting to grab my ankle. But at the same time, I know that if I don't hang my ankle off the side of the bed and there was something under there, it won't be able to get it.
Right. Oh, and this isn't a scary story, but it's kind of a funny story. And what made me think of it was what you were just saying about Stephen King. Now, I remind you that we have three cats, but, of course, you don't think of that right away when things happen. Not always, and especially with this. So I was getting out of bed, and I put my feet on the floor, and nothing happened right away. But I'm sitting there, and I feel something furry on my foot. And I didn't think cat right away. I was thinking spider. I moved my foot and I was like, ah, because I'm very allergic to any kind of bites or anything. So I didn't want to get bitten by a spider. So I'm like, ah. And then after I moved my foot, I saw his paw there that was just laying there. And then he took his paw very slowly back under the bed.
Oh, my God.
And then as soon as I put my foot back closer to the bed, he stuck his paw back out and was swatting my feet. It was hilarious.
Oh, that is
but
funny.
I thought it was a spider.
Oh, my gosh.
So I did want to get into some of your upcoming stuff while we still have time. We still actually got about a half hour. But there's quite a few things, so hopefully we'll have time to go over all of them. But if we don't, I mean, that's okay. It could be something on the next show if you decide to come back on.
Very good.
So there's one that I think is completed called Vert, and I know that it's about virtual something or other. So tell us about that one.
Well, that one is a very, very minimal role where they basically sent out a casting call for, they have a scene in there where you're going through kind of the virtual reality version of somebody, the virtual reality world. And so they're just going through all these screens. So they basically had everybody just almost like if you were making a YouTube video about really anything. And so I just sent one of those in. That was very early into my career, and I was excited to. It was one of those where you could send that in and you could get a credit, and so that's in post production now, and I don't know how visible my part will be in there because it's going to be one of many screens that are kind of scrolling by in the background.
Well, one thing that most people know, I wouldn't even see just a few people, most people know that when you're watching a movie, you never know what, because everybody's different, you never know what people are going to notice and not notice, or what they're going to hear, whether they'll like it or not. And perfect, one of the perfect examples, because I was going to say, well, you're saying that it's a small part, and I'm not disagreeing with you, because like in time on screen, it may be a small part. But as many famous actors know, you can get a whole career out of a tiny part. Ask Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah. Well, then not to mention that there are people out there who are career extras. They make a lot of money. They make their living just being extras in different productions.
Yeah, and people always remember them. They just don't know their names most of the time because they're not even given, they may be given credits, but they don't know the name of the character. The character may not even be given a name. It may just say man on something or other. But with something like that, as long as they give them a credit on the film, you can at least go back and look, because there are some older movies, and, you know, when I say old, I mean, you know, old. As you look at them, it'll say man on bench or, you know, whatever, and it'll say the actor's name, and then you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. I want to go back and see what he looks like. I don't remember what he looked like, really, but I'll go back and look. And then you go back and look, and then you remember that for later. And then lots of times you find out, oh, well, that person, once they become famous, that they were in this role. And then you go back and you look, and you're like, yeah, that is them. I mean, I've seen many a famous person in, you know, small roles. And sometimes it was after they became famous, not before they were famous. The before they're famous, you can understand it because, you know, they needed work. But after they're famous, they don't have to do that little stuff. Like, I can't recall the name of the movie right now that he was in. I don't really remember right now. I'll probably remember it later and feel embarrassed because I couldn't remember it when I'm on the air. But Walter Matthau, he was already famous, and this was a movie like from the 90s that he was in, and it was a very tiny little part. And he had his head down because he was in a bar, and he put his head down because he was supposed to be like almost drunk and passed out, and he lifted up his head, and that's when you saw it was Walter Matthau.
Oh, that's great.
And he did have a credit at the end, but you know, I knew who he was, so I didn't really need the credit. I was like, oh, Walter Matthau. And that was his only part in the film. He just lifted up his head and then put it back down almost immediately. And if you weren't really paying attention, you wouldn't even notice that he was in it.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it is. So you did something called, or maybe are doing, because some of these I don't know if you're still working on them or not, Dagon Troll World Chronicles, because I think that's pre-production.
It's production. It's animated, and so it takes a long time because they don't have a room full of animators. It's kind of a passion project by this female-led studio, and they do really great work, and I'm excited to be a part of this project. You know, they have a couple of horror legends in there, including Doug Bradley, who plays Pinhead in the original Hellraiser movie, and Tim Curry, who is very famous, of course, for playing Pennywise in the original It. He's Bosworth and Clue. He Rooster and Annie. He's just a very well-known, amazing actor. And so just having my name in any project that they're a part of is just a massive honor. So I'm excited about that one.
Oh, nice. Very nice. It's always nice to be able to get to work with, and even if you don't directly work with them, to be in a film that somebody that you admire was in. One of my guests was in a movie with David Soul, and that's actually why I brought it up, because at the time that the movie came out was in the very early 80s, and I still had a crush on David Soul at that time, so of course I picked that movie. But he said he didn't actually get to work with him at all in the film, but he was excited to be in a film that David Soul was in. And so
yes,
and that's
we're all just doing voices, and so, you know, everyone's submitting their parts separately, you know, from home studios, and so,
yeah.
But yeah, it's just being a part of the same project. It's just crazy. It's so great.
Oh yeah, and now sometimes in films when you do voices, you for like the animation and everything, you can be in the same studio. But they don't do a lot of that now with COVID and everything. They prefer just to have them do their own and then send it in, which is actually very understandable.
COVID, as a form of control, even when they were using the same studio, they would typically have, for large productions, people would be in a booth on their own. You're being directed on your lines. From time to time, they would do different things for somebody to interact. You know, Mike Myers famously had his wife stand outside the booth, because when he's saying all his lines about how much he loves Fiona, he's telling her, I love you and all that, as Shrek, he wanted his wife there for him to say that to, as you know, so he could really feel it. And I know that when they were going to make Wreck-It Ralph, initially, can't think of the actor's name, John C. Reilly, he turned down the role because he said he didn't want to do animation because it was you're in a booth on your own and you don't get to interact with anyone. So in that case, they set up so that he could record with whoever he's exchanging lines with, so that he could have that face-to-face interaction. And so it's not typical to record in the same room with a lot of people, even pre-COVID times. But I was one time flown to Baltimore for a project that's not out yet. But that was one case where they did put us all in a circle with each of us were with our own mic. And it was a professional studio, so we had engineers running to make sure our mics weren't bleeding into each other. And we were all right there running all of our lines off of each other in the same room. And that's the only time that I've ever gotten to do that. It was a very fun experience.
Hmm. Well, some of the people that I know in the business, including family, they've had the experiences of sometimes just one other person. It just depended on what they thought would work best. Because sometimes people didn't get it exactly right when they were by themselves, but when they were put in the same room, it ended up this better. And so they use that instead, because they would try both ways and then use what works.
It makes
and
a difference.
The same thing
Oh,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying that everyone's going to kind of work better in a different way. Everyone's going to have their own things that they respond to. It definitely makes a difference when you're able to interact with somebody. It's definitely more fun. But at the same time, I could see somebody, and myself included, sometimes being more self-conscious when you're around a lot of people. A lot of the sessions are directed, and when they're not, you kind of have you just go through this where there's absolutely nobody around, and you can just really go crazy and have fun and not worry about anybody being in there. Now, after a while, you get to where you don't care if anyone's in there or not. You know, I know at the beginning of my career, I was a lot more self-conscious about stuff like that, because when you're doing voiceover, even though your voice is all that people hear, it doesn't work if you're not acting. So if you're not, you know, if you're doing a scene where you're yelling at somebody in an animation project, you got to make a big monster face, and you got to wave your arms around, and you got to do all this stuff physically, you know, hunch over, whatever, depending on what character you're playing. You got to play that character physically, or the voice doesn't work. People can hear that difference, and you need to be, I guess, animated in order to work in animation. You have to really be able to embody that.
Well, Well, yeah. And my family members, that's the same type of thing that they say. And they do it because I've been in the studio when they've been doing it. And they're like waving their arms and making all the little movements that they'd be making as if they were physically in the film. And in some ways it looks funny, but in other ways it's like, yeah, that makes sense because it makes
Oh yeah.
it sound different.
And it's
Yeah.
impressive to see people do it. I mean, have you ever seen the footage of Andy Serkis playing Gollum or playing King Kong or Benedict Cumberbatch when he played
Yes.
Smaug? It's they're downright scary, even though they're in these silly, silly costumes, they still manage to be intimidating. And so those are impressive performances.
Oh, most definitely. Okay, so I wanted to move on because now we're getting a little less time, but we still got time to go over a couple more.
Okay,
There's
great.
one called Pay Attention. I don't know if it's still in development or not, but whatever you can tell us about that one.
That one is in development, and it's one that I've agreed to do. I've not recorded anything for that. It's basically one that they're trying to raise funds for, and they've gotten certain people attached to the project. And that one will be both a voiceover and an on-screen appearance as a newscaster. So that would shoot here in Dallas if it comes through. I know Dee Wallace is attached. So it's just a matter of getting their funding. At this point, what they do is they get the actors to sign a letter of intent saying that if this goes into production, that they will do it. And so that's the level that is in right now. It's in very, very early stages.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye out for it. There's
Oh,
one
absolutely.
you did, yeah, a TV series called Jericho's Bane, and that's, I think, in post-production. Tell us about that.
I'm super excited about that. Now that one, what we've done is the pilot. That's an animated series, and that one is actually the one that I went to Baltimore for. And so they had all of us who were casting that go and do our lines together. And Jericho's Bane is a really cool audiobook that I got to do. I did the second book in the series, and I'm working on the third now. But because I had done the audiobook and I'm doing a lot of voices in the audiobook, and the author has been so happy with my work on a very cool book, he offered me the chance to audition for this when he wanted to make this pilot for a possible animated series. And so I did audition and got the part of Gabriel, the Archangel. And yeah, oh my gosh, I had so much fun recording for that. It's a character that has a lot of gravitas, and I've had a lot of fun doing those audiobooks because we have a lot of villains in there that, that's what I have the most fun playing. So we have a lot of these demonic villains and that I've been just having a blast acting, doing the voice acting for. It's basically a story that is about spiritual warfare, but rather than being the spiritual warfare that we typically think about, they're actually using these like high-tech weapons, and they're actually at actual war, on a plane that humans can't see. But it is angels at war with demons, and a lot of really creative things that this author came up with, such as the halos that you see depicted in a lot of paintings. The book said that a lot of people think that those halos were this really nice thing, whereas they're actually these explosive collars to assure that none of them try to flee the way Lucifer did to go to the other side. So it was just a really neat, really creative book that I got to do, and I'm excited to be starting that book three right now.
I think I might want to watch that. It sounds pretty interesting.
I'm so excited about it.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I like hearing when people get excited about their projects. Excuse me for clearing my throat, but I can't help it.
No, I totally get that,
There's
believe me.
a video game that is in post production, One Way Road. Tell us about doing that.
That one looks like it's coming out towards the third quarter of the year. That one is one that they kind of cut close to the chest. So I don't know much about it other than my own part played there. You know, that one came to me through an agency. And so they just sent me this and said, hey, we're going to pay this amount. You read this role. Outside of the lines that I did, I don't know the story for that one at all. So I'm very excited to see it. The trailer is up on the Steam page, and it looks fantastic. It looks like a great game. So I can't wait for that to come out to be able to show footage of whatever it is. You know, whenever a game like that comes out, I typically will take a little segment that I was in, and I'll put it up on my YouTube. So people can definitely keep an eye on it for there, or you know, you can always go to the game's Steam page, and you'll get a notification when changes are made, such as when the game is released or something like that.
It sounds pretty interesting. There's something else you did called Terrible. It's also in post-production. What can you tell us about that one?
That one looks so great. I have not recorded my lines for that. So far, I've only recorded lines for the trailer. So that is a Turkish movie that they just they've been working on it for quite a while. And the guy that's directing it, I guess, does special effects as well. So he wanted to do his own production. And it really, just the pictures I've seen from it are just really fantastic. And basically I'll be doing one of the characters for the English dub of the movie because they've recorded it. I'm not sure if they recorded it in Turkish and they need it and they're going to translate it, or what they do a lot of times is they'll record these movies in another country, and they will hire local actors and they'll speak English, but it'll be heavily accented English a lot of the time. So they'll then, with the intent of somebody dubbing over those lines with a voice that doesn't have the accent, or, you know, that's just maybe a better translation of it. So I have not done the voiceover for that just yet. Like I said, just the trailer, but I am so excited to be a part of that one. That looks like a really scary movie.
Yeah, I'll be looking for that one. Now, you did the voice in English version that's in post-production for Alta Voce. Tell us about that one.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really neat one. It's kind of it follows three people. It was shot in Italian, and it's an Italian film. And there's some narration going on, and I guess the idea of it is, and I haven't seen it yet because it's not complete, but the idea is that you think you're following one narrator, and as it goes, you start thinking, wait, this narrator, the person narrating is not this guy we've been watching, it's this new guy that just came in, and they kind of keep switching in this, and as it goes, you're kind of thrown back and forth about, well, who are we hearing, like, who's the one that's done this thing, what's happening here. And so that seemed like a really neat premise. I'm excited to see the final product on that one.
Wow, that does sound interesting. And of course I don't like all Italian movies, but I like Italian movies, and a lot of times I'm not fluent or anything, but I can understand it enough that I don't necessarily have to have the subtitles. And in fact, sometimes it's better without the subtitles, because sometimes they have them saying things that they're not really saying. Now, French, I'm more fluent in. And I know that for a fact, because when I'm watching some of these movies and they have the subtitles, I know exactly what they're saying. But yet when I'm looking at the subtitles, it's saying all kinds of stuff that they're not even saying. And that's why a lot of the time
you have to change the translation, because if you do a direct translation, it won't make sense. And so you have to say, well, they wouldn't say that here. They would say this instead. This phrase wouldn't make sense.
Right. Yeah, because
I'm like that with the Italian that you're talking about. It's funny, Italian is the perfect cross between French and Spanish. It's right in the middle of that. And since I speak Spanish, I understand Italian really well, and because of that, I can understand French a little bit.
Well, because I know French, I can kind of, I do pretty good Italian, and I do pretty good with Spanish. Like I said, I'm not saying I'm fluent or anything by any means, but I can do well enough to get along, because as a nurse, I once worked in a free clinic, and most of the people that were coming in there spoke Spanish. So I spoke just enough Spanish to be able to get along. I mean, there was an interpreter that would come in if I started having trouble understanding or getting across to them what I was trying to say, because, like I said, my Spanish isn't necessarily the greatest, but I did well enough. And there was a couple of times when there would be that they would have their own interpreter, like a family member or what have you. They would be telling me what all was wrong with them in Spanish, and I'd be writing it down, and the interpreter would be saying, oh, you know what they're saying? And I'd say, oh, yeah. And then I would repeat it back, and I'd say, tell me if I got that wrong. And then they're like, no, you got it exactly. Oh, well, thank you. And from working there, I got better at Spanish. So it does help to have jobs like that. If you ever want to learn another language, go and get a job like that where you kind of have to. Maybe not speak in the language, but at least understand it. Because I'm better at understanding it than I am speaking it, Spanish anyway. But now the French, I felt very good one time, because this lady I worked with, she said to me, you've been speaking French since you were born? And she was saying this in French, and so I'm saying back in French, no, I only had French in the fourth and fifth grade and in grade school. It's like, wow. So we're getting close to the end, and it didn't have too much to do with me talking, because I've been watching the time. That was only 3 minutes. Let me see if we have time to go over one more, because we've got a little over 6 minutes left. Because I did want to get into letting people know about your, maybe I'll do that instead of going over the two other films I have listed here. You have a website called AlbyRoblesVoice.com. So tell us what people can do there and they can go visit.
And that website I basically use as a platform for anybody who wants to learn more about my career or wants to get in touch or potential clients. You know, it's going to have links to my IMDb from there, links to all my social media. It's going to have listings of projects that I've worked on or clients that I've worked for, because, you know, my IMDb is not going to necessarily have, you know, food companies that I've done ads for. You know, I worked for Motorola at one point, or Icy Hot. So those types of things are listed on there, and as well as a form for people to get in touch. And it also links to my podcast website as well.
Cool. So that would be a good way for them to contact you to get on your Scare Me.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you also are the owner of Albie Robles Voice LLC. And so tell us just a little bit about that. You know, take a couple minutes.
Well, it was just, doing voiceover. It was, I was hearing quite a bit from some of the different voiceover podcasts that it's, you know, what it's best to do it is in the LLC at least, because you want to protect, you're starting a small business. And if for whatever reason, through getting sick or for any reason that you weren't able to complete a project, in case of a possible lawsuit or something, you want to be protected, because then, you know, if anything happens, it happens to the LLC, not to you on your name. So a lot of people do need to just do that as they're going into business. Once they start making a little more, to where it's not just, you know, it's beyond being a hobby and they are making a living from it, you need to often move into that territory in order to just make sure you're conducting business in the best way.
Yeah, I understand about the LLCs and how they work. My brother-in-law, he is a CPA. And at first, he was just like doing it as a sideline business for his CPA work that he was doing in an office that was owned by somebody else. Once his own business took off, he's like, well, I'm going to put the LLC on it. And the thing about it is, it also makes it look more professional to have the LLC on there. People see LLC and they'll go, ooh, that's professional.
Oh, yes. And the website was just the website was something I started very early on, just to, you do want to be seen, like you said, as a credible business. And, you know, well, at first I didn't have a lot of traffic to the website, but when I'm sending out an email to a potential client, I'd rather not be from a Yahoo or Gmail address. You know, if it comes from your own domain, it's definitely something that they'll take a little more time to read or to look closer at, because it shows that you are in this business, and that you're fully in. You're not a hobbyist and such. So it makes a difference.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Now, we're down to like 2.5 minutes. So usually at about this time in the show, I ask the guest if there's anything that they want to say in the last 2 minutes. It doesn't have to be about films or any of your work. It could be basically whatever you want, just remembering this is a PG-13 show. Okay, so whatever it is that you want to say in the last 2 minutes.
I just want to say I started doing this at the age of 40, when I thought all possibilities of having a creative career had dried up. I want to tell people, because there are a lot of people out there that aspire to do this, that first, no, it's not easy to do. It's so much work. A lot of people don't expect it to be. But at the same time, I want to tell people that it is achievable and it is doable. If they go in with the mindset that they're going to work hard to do this and that they're going to take it seriously and put in the work and the time and money, because you do need to invest in yourself in order to climb on here, you'd be able to. This is a career that people can get going, but they can't go in with the attitude of, well, I'm just going to just get to talk and I'll get to be in my favorite shows and I'll get a lot of money. It's not that way. You know, there's a lot of work out there. It's not all the fun animation work that's out there too, but in order to get that, you got to go through all the other work as well. And it's definitely a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it is doable.
Oh, well, thank you for that. And I'm sure there are people out there that are going, yeah, because of the age thing. Not that you're old, but whenever they hear of somebody older that starts doing something, they always like to hear that, because a lot of people don't do stuff until they get older. So there you are.
And they'll put it off. And a lot of times the excuse is, well, if it's going to take me 5 years to really make anything with it, I don't have 5 years to work on that. But here's the thing. The 5 years, they're going to pass either way. So 5 years from now, you can be 5 years into a career and having made headway and having made a difference and having worked on some cool stuff. Or in 5 years, you can still be sitting there thinking, maybe I should do that one day.
Right. And I don't mean to cut you off, but Blog Talk Radio will cut you off in the middle of a sentence anyway. So I'm going to end the show now, because our time is up, and I want to thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. Goodbye. I was almost said goodnight, because I usually do the show at night. Goodbye.